Going beyond the headlines to the deeper issues. 96.3 WHUR and HUR Voices, Sirius XM Channel 141. This is the Insight Segment, where your questions and comments matter. At 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810.
Welcome back to the Daily Drum on WHUR and Sirius XM Channel 141. This is the Insight Segment. I'm Harold Fisher.
I'm grieving the loss of my son. Although you're not dead, but you soon will be if you keep going with these homosexual tendencies of yours.
You may recognize Veronica Harrington, the fictional character in Tyler Perry's The Haves and Have-Nots. That character is known for her hateful, homophobic comments and actions directed against her son in the drama. That's TV. But the issues are very real for the gay community, which is why so many, as the saying goes, stay in the closet. They don't come out. Well, tonight we're going to talk about that on this National Coming Out Day. My guests are David Johns, Executive Director of the National Black Justice Coalition, and Andre Watkins, a millennial professional who came out 4 years ago. Lines are open if you have a comment or a question at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Tweet us using the hashtag WHURFM. David, Andre, thanks for coming in. I appreciate it.
Sure. Thank you for having us.
So, okay, when I said Andre came out 4 years ago and everybody's clapping, why the applause for that?
I think at least, well, during that time, it definitely wasn't a liberating experience for me because it was tough. My parents were not in agreement with me being liberated in my identity and who I choose to love. I remember talking to my mother about it, and this was after I had just started dating someone who is now my fiancé.
Yes, love.
Yeah.
Yes, love.
And, she would send me flowers and chocolates to my job. And I remember bringing those things home. At the time, I was still living with my parents. And my mom would be like, well, who is this stuff coming from? Tell me who it's coming from. Prior to that time, I had always been in a relationship with a man.
Did she say who or did she say him?
She assumed it was a guy. Yeah. Yeah, she assumed it was a guy. She started, you know, calling out, like, my ex-boyfriend's names. And I would just get so anxious, like, oh my God, I can't, you know, yeah. I can't tell my mother, you know, my parents. I grew up in a Christian household, Baptist household. So same sex, relationships, marriage, fantasies were inappropriate, and just not in alignment with their belief system.
A one-way ticket to hell. Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
David, why is it so difficult to come out in 2018?
This is the answer for most things regarding the challenges that black people in America experience, white supremacy and anti-blackness.
What do you mean by that?
So much of the challenges that those of us who are black and LGBTQ or same gender loving, which is a term that I use, struggle with that intersectional identity because of the role that religion, in particular the religion that was used to justify colonization, has played for us. And so what that means is that we often are shaped by, understand leadership as a result of experience and otherwise see ourselves in the world through the lens of what it means to be Christian people, to be people of faith. And in this country in particular, unless you are white, male, Protestant, landowning, and have children, derivations from that are problematic, wrong, and will lead to people going to hell. Mm-hmm. And so ultimately, we are the descendant of people who have believed the lie that everybody who shows up in the world in ways that are right, sanctified, and just look just like white, Protestant, landowning, white supremacist. Mm-hmm. And so we have a lot of unlearning and unpacking to do in order to ensure that all of us can be liberated enough to stand in our truth, regardless of whether or not that means we're claiming space as individuals who, again, have intersectional identities because of our gender or sexual identity, or because we have a disability, whether that be hidden or invisible, we speak another language, we come from another country of national origin, or show up in any other way that would be traditionally queer.
Mm. Let me share some statistics with you. Approximately 1 in 100 American women and 2 in 100 American men identify as homosexual, with another 4% of Americans identifying as bisexual. And yet, homosexuality remains a controversial topic here in America. When you're talking about African Americans, people of color, why is this even more difficult for them than, say, white people?
Let me offer two things. One, another stat. More than 50% of young people surveyed in the last couple of years identify as anything other than heterosexual. That's not to say that most of our kids are signing up for same-sex relationships, but they are resisting this idea that we all had to fit neatly into boxes that have been created by white people, mm-hmm. right? And so they are claiming spaces that haven't existed before. This is also why we have the introduction of the term Latinx, right? A way to queer the fact that generally when we refer to Latinos or Latinas, it's a gendered preference for the traditional binaries. So there are a generation of people who are saying that what you've done to put us into boxes that we don't fit in is just not going to work for us anymore, right? The second thing is that to be white in our society and to be gay has been celebrated. And so this is why I use a term on today of inviting in and not coming out.
What do you mean by that?
The way that Hollywood would have you believe that this works for us is that we sit our parents down at a dinner or a family reunion, and we then come out to them, right? This anxiety-fraught moment where we reveal our truths, and then our families maybe cry for a second, but then embrace us. Mm-hmm. White people will go through that. They then move to a gayborhood in Hollywood, California.
A gayborhood?
A gay neighborhood. Okay. That's the term they use. Right. Chelsea, New York, or a Boys Town, Chicago. And then the gay part of their identity is the thing that's celebrated and becomes a source of power for them. Black people don't have that privilege. Black LGBTQ, SGL people live in the South with other black people. We live in the states where it's still legal to discriminate against us based on our gender and sexual identity, right? And so what that means is that the privileges that white people sometimes take for granted about being able to claim an identity and move into a protected space just doesn't exist for us. Coming out in Jackson, Mississippi might mean that you are offering up yourself to be bullied, harassed, maybe even killed, right? I don't want to even, it's not lost on me that we're having this conversation after two trans sisters were murdered in Chicago last week. There have been more than 10 murders of trans black women in Jacksonville, Florida alone. And so for black people who have intersectional identities, this is often just not about coming out to claim space and be celebrated, but about finding spaces where you can feel safe, where you can be yourself, where you can be, as my sister said, liberated in your truth.
202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. This is National Coming Out Day, and we're talking about some of the challenges that members of the LGBTQ community are having as they make a decision to become public with their truth. If you have a question, if you have a comment, give us a call at 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Andre, what was it like when you finally decided to come out?
I have a really, really close relationship with my mother. And it was just really hurtful to have to keep something so important away from her, knowing that she was wondering, what's going on? Why aren't you having intimate conversations with me anymore? Why do you seem so distant? And I ended up having to tell her. And my mother is interesting. When something doesn't sit well with her, she doesn't necessarily shut down, but she gets quiet. I think that that is her way of trying to be diplomatic and just listen. Let me see what's going on. Let me see how I can say what I want to say without either hurting her feelings or tearing her up with words. And so she listened. And fortunately, at the time, I was actually on my way to see my fiance. So I had told myself, let me go ahead and tell her while we're on our way somewhere so I can jump out the car. Because I don't want to rest.
Stop, drop, and roll.
That's right.
I got to go.
Get down to 20 miles an hour.
I got to go.
There you go. Yeah.
But I knew I had to, although I was staying the weekend with my fiance, that I would have to come back home. And so when I came back home, I was approached by her on multiple occasions. And, you know, she'd ask me just, my mom is very blunt, you know, how do you feel about this and with your relationship with God? Do you feel comfortable knowing that God is not in agreement with same-sex relationships, partnerships? And it brought me a lot of anxiety. And so I had to go through a process. It took me several years to finally become comfortable with my spirituality and my sexual identity.
202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We're talking about National Coming Out Day for the LGBTQ community. If you're thinking about coming out, if you're struggling with it, give us a call. If you are a family member who has a relative who you believe may want to come out, may want to share their own truth about their own sexuality, and you are struggling with it, we're certainly inviting you to give us a call as well. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. David, what about you? Henri came out 4 years ago. You were older.
Yeah, I don't want to age my sister. But we have similar experiences, so I think three things are important. One, I want to acknowledge that Andre spoke to what I understand to be religious trauma. Mm-hmm. And recently, religious trauma was added to the DSM as a clinical diagnosis that we should all be mindful of in terms of the experiences of Black LGBTQ people. So there's a political movement mostly led by white LGBTQ leaders that are talking about conversion therapy. And the damages that are done, or the damage rather that is done as a result of that, those clinical procedures. And so for us as Black people, I think it's important to lift up that there are parallel considerations to be made for how it is we experience trauma as a result of religiosity. I had a conversation similar to Andre, with my mother when I was in a relationship with a man. I've dated, for the majority of my maturation was in relationships with women, loved them, still love them. But there became a point where I became attracted to a young man that showed up in a way that I'm clear was divine. It was because I could not have the kinds of conversations that I'd always had with my mother that I was forced to invite her in. And I never forget it, sort of walking around the complex in the space where he and I shared space. And I said everything to my mother, but I'm in a relationship with a man that I'm trying to make work. And I remember finding the strength to say that to her. And my mother's response to me, she said two things, and I'll never forget them. One, because my mother likes to tell everybody's business, she said, this is your business to tell. I want you to know that I'll honor that. And the second thing she said to me was, if this has prevented you from finding and enjoying love, then I hope that you find love. Mm-hmm. Now the reality is that in as much as I had my own process to endure, my mother had one as well. So while we had that moment, and it was the thing that I think Black kids hope for when they think about having this conversation with their parents or inviting them in, it took my mother some time to get to the point where we are now, where we can actually have conversations about my intimate life, right? So my mother would still meet women at a bank or at her doctor's office and would send me their picture and send them my info. She was still working through the vestiges of the life that she had imagined for me. But ultimately, the thing that was most important for me in having that conversation with my mother was just acknowledging how I show up in the world and confiding that information to somebody who I know knows and loves me. Once I had the conversation with my mother, I could care less about who knew, who said what. And the reality is that people are going to say and assume anything anyway.
I need to take a break, but when we come back, we're going to go to the phone lines. We're going to talk to Nigel calling from Bowie. So, Nigel, stay with us. We invite you to give us a call at 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. This is National Coming Out Day, and we're talking about the challenges of members of the LGBTQ community as they make a decision about becoming public about their sexuality. Whether this is you or someone that you know, we invite you to give us a call again at 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Stay with us. The Daily Drum will continue on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. Jeff Brown is next with the original Quiet Storm on 96.3 WHUR. More of this conversation and your phone calls in just a few seconds. Stay with us.
The Howard University Radio Network is WHUR 96.3 FM, WHUR World 96.3 HD2, student-run WHBC HD3, GlassHouseRadio.com, Sirius XM Channel 142, HBCU and Sirius XM Channel 141, HUR Voices, Washington.
Jeffrey, be a man. Stop running. running around after some little thing. You got a sexy-ass woman upstairs waiting for you, but you need to run around after some disgusting wannabe police officer. Now go up there and act like a man and do what I told you.
There she is again, Veronica Harrington, a fictional character in Tyler Perry's The Haves and Have-Nots. One of the more high-profile fictional characters known for her hateful and homophobic comments about her son in that drama. Well, tonight we're talking not only about members of the LGBTQ community coming out, but also how to deal with homophobia and even people who love them who are struggling with where they are and their sexual identity. This is the Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. Of course, this is National Coming Out Day. And my guests are David Johns, Executive Director of the National Black Justice Coalition, and Andre Watkins, a millennial professional. She came out 4 years ago. Congratulations. She's now also engaged to a wonderful lady.
Thank you.
Yeah. Like that haircut, too. Looking good.
Black girl magic.
Yeah. How about that? Let me go to the phone lines real quick. Let us talk to Nigel. Nigel calling from Bowie. Thanks for calling, Nigel. What's on your mind?
Hey, good night, everyone. How are you doing tonight?
Doing just fine.
I was just wanted to make a comment that, you know, other than the part where people of color struggling with their sexuality, there's a part of history that we don't discuss that's very important, which was season plantations. There were only two season plantations in the whole Western Hemisphere, Barbados and Jamaica. And what they did is they took slaves there and broke them for a month long, sexually assaulted them in front of everybody. So as time went on, we as a people, if to discipline me, you sexually assaulted me. When I have kids and family, what do you think I'm going to do to them when I want to discipline them? And so that has been passed on, and they had to break slaves before they came to America.
Nigel, let me stop you there because I'm a little confused. And while, you know, certainly we are aware of that history, I don't see what that has to do with being gay or lesbian or part of the community. Am I missing something, David?
No, but I think he's attempting to explain to, I think he's attempting to make sense of how it is that this has become something that's prevalent in our community. And speaking to what other folks would say is a pathology regarding homosexuality amongst Black people.
Yeah, and I'm not sure that the two are really connected.
No, I think
they're not connected.
The first point to me is meaningful, if for only the reason that one of the foremost thinkers in America, Frederick Douglass, identified in the autobiography of a slave the moment where he battled Covey, who was the slave master. What he talks about in the book that few people want to acknowledge is the threat of physical assault and violence that he experienced as an enslaved African that he was responding to. That is very much something that is in the book, and it is also very true to Nigel's point about the process of attempting to break slaves. I do think it's both dangerous, and I don't know that we need to go beyond that to then attempt to explain how it is that homosexuality exists in America today. To be clear, same-sex relationships have existed for as long as relationships have existed. That is true in Africa as a continent, as it is in Western society, that which we have grafted our country's foundation upon. And so I think that the thing that is most important for us is to acknowledge that this idea of people being straight or gay or anything else is created by people out of convenience, and we need to create space where people can show up in whatever that looks like for them.
Yeah. Nigel, thank you for your comment. Let me go to April calling from Inglewood, California.
Inglewood.
April, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Well, as a mother of a child that came out to me when she was 15 years old, I think as a parent, you kind of know that this is not the normal procedure. Something is different about this child. We get caught up on our own personal whatever, and we try to project that on our kids, but if we allow our kids to be who they are, they will progress, they will have the love, they will have the nurturing, and they will be successful people. But if we beat on them about their sexuality, that stops all their forward progress for anything else.
Interesting. April, thank you so much. What do you think about what April just shared with us, Andre?
Yeah, so I think that we need to shift the narrative of what it means to be different. You know, I heard April say that, you know, you can...
Or normal. It's,
right.
That's right. Yeah.
Or normal. And I'll just kind of speak from personal experience. For me, my gender, my presentation, I am a woman. I consider myself to be a woman who identifies as an androgynous woman who identifies with my masculinity and my femininity. And so sometimes my presentation, I you know, I kind of will dress up in some basketball shorts, and, you know, a tank top. Other times I like to go out and I'll have very tight, you know, leggings, jegging situation with a crop top. That doesn't mean that I am confused or, I guess that I'm different. It just means that I'm outside of that, or I'm stepping outside of that narrative that is always kind of projected in a sense that there's a gender binary. You're either a man or you're either a woman. There is no in between.
Mm-hmm. Do you think your parents knew?
No, my mother actually is still, and my father somewhat are still struggling with that. You know, I remember when I was probably about 4 or 5 years old, from that time on until now I'm 31 years old, fantasizing about being with a woman and like what it would mean to be with a woman. But at that time, I didn't recognize that I could be with a woman as a woman. I had sometimes I would go to the mirror and put my hands on my forehead to cover up my hair to imagine what I would be like, what I would look like and feel like as a man. Because I understood that there was only one type of relationship, the man and a woman. But no, I don't think they knew. I was a little tomboy when I was younger. I still am. But
that's not about your sexuality. And I just want to say that's a dangerous question. At the core of what April talked about for me, and I'm from Inglewood, California, so I appreciate it. Is the concern for the safety of your children. You want them to grow up in a space where you don't have to worry about their safety and their well-being. And I think for any parent, the idea that your child is going to be different to the point where they stand out such that they might become susceptible to being bullied or violent or any of these other things, it's a concern for them.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to equate sexuality or the process of coming out in our society in ways that lessen the significance of it. But every one of us has something that we don't want to talk about. It could be how much student loan debt you have, mental health in your family.
Your weight.
It could be your rate. It could be HIV status, right? Each of these things are part of who we are. And it is only because we live in a society that tells us that people show up in ways that they don't, that we believe this lie that we have to force ourselves to be anything other than that which we are. The idea that parents can tell that a child is gay is problematic because it only reinforces the stereotypes that we use to try and identify people as gay. Right. It also doesn't allow for the fact that people make decisions at different points in their lifetimes. Right. And I have a difficult time with this, especially around things like Coming Out Day, because in the Black community, what we then do is talk about folks that are on the DL or who aren't out or who are still in the closet. What does it mean for somebody to be in a same-sex relationship 1 year and then 5 years later to be in a traditional heterosexual relationship? All of this for me is about creating space for people to be without apology in ways where they can feel safe and protected.
202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Carrie Ann, are you calling from Gaithersburg? Carrie Ann, are you there? Excuse me. Can you hear me?
I can hear you.
Go right ahead.
Is that better?
Go right ahead.
My comment was, it was something else, but then I heard Nigel's comment.
Mm-hmm.
And then that kind of speaks to how when it was me, when I technically have never really come out, I've just always been me, and that's just what it is. But I come from a West Indian family, and I think it was almost like unheard of, to the point where I felt like I was the only gay person in the entire world. And then I'm Black, and then I'm from the Caribbean, so then it was like the whole religious angle of it. And then what Nigel was talking about, how I've heard those stories all my life about being gay is not natural, and also the nonsense just make me feel like I was less than. So it wasn't until like I got older and just came into my own and just surrounded myself with people that more or less looked like me and who had the same thought process, was like, nah, I am normal. This is not me. It's the rest of y'all that need to like catch up with the rest of the world.
Yep. Interesting. Carrie Ann, thank you so much. I appreciate it. So here's a question for you, David. Is it important to come out? And I don't mean for those who are coming out,
No, but, for the world.
Yeah, because
all of the reasons that she just talked about.
Yeah, why is your sexual orientation? Why does everyone have to?
Because
cut to
we
know?
Live in a world where the lie that people tell that everybody is born straight and those who aren't are problematic still exist. And it's important for people, in particular for Black people, who are already at the lowest rungs of any quality of life indicator ladder, to know that they are not the first person to have to go at life also having to deal with the burden of being LGBTQ or same-gender loving. And so this is incredibly important, whether we call it coming out or inviting in, having conversations where we claim space and affirm for other members of our community that it is okay. It is actually the thing that we should all be doing is finding the strength to speak truth to power, especially when it shakes our soul, for the reason that young people should not have to ever think for a second that they're the only one to go at life in this way.
America still struggles with this issue. We've seen, and you as a member of the Obama administration have seen laws, policies, and powerful individuals really struggle to keep up with the way the world has changed. And as we've just seen just this week, a report came out about a transgender student in Loudoun County, which during a fire drill, teachers did not know where to send the student when they were supposed to be in a safe space, the bathroom.
Yeah.
Girls' bathroom, boys' bathroom.
Yep.
What to do from a policy perspective? How can this world, the America, really, really catch up? Particularly when we seem to be even more divided on so many issues.
Yeah. Let's talk about so one that's by design, mm-hmm. right? In the Art of War, what they talk about is that the key to success is first to distract, and then after that you divide. And so we should be clear that this administration is focused on attempting to distract and attempting to divide because there's strength in community and there's strength in numbers. With regard to both policy and practice, one, we should be asking why it is that we do certain things that we just do and don't ever think about them, like separating children based on gender. Why do we have girls line up on one side and boys line up on the other side? Why do we assign girls pink and boys blue? These things have happened because people have decided that there are things that have happened, but have no real logical grounding in the decisions that we're making that are supposed to be in the best interest of children. As a teacher, I taught kindergarten and third grade. This is important because there was a 9-year-old boy who had the strength to come out to his family in Colorado just this year and went to school and his classmates told him to kill himself. This is a result of us not creating classrooms, our homes, our communities that are safe and supportive of all of our babies. And so that school should not have been asking which bathroom I send this baby to, because the bathroom should be gender neutral. I don't really care where you go to the bathroom as long as you're doing what you're supposed to be doing in that space. But how do we ensure that all kids in this school are safe, engaged, and supportive? Not during the moments in which we're worried about an emergency, but at all times during the day. But and too often we don't make decisions based on that.
But certainly, while that may be an ideal society, you know that whether they're Black or you're white or person of color or wherever, the gender assignment is often the way that parents raise their children.
Yeah, but again, I go back to why. Yeah. This isn't mm-hmm. about ideal. This is about what's required to get to the point to where we have equity.
Yeah, and that's what that,
where
that
we
was
are,
my
where
question.
We are moving through the things that have seemingly existed as barriers to us. And a part of that is tearing down the socially constructed categories that are designed to preserve privilege. Gender works in the same way, which is why we're having this Me Too moment,
yeah.
where again, we're saying it does not make sense for you to relegate people based on something that has nothing to do with their humanity or how they fundamentally show up in the world.
When we come back, some thoughts about how to come out, how to make that decision today, tomorrow, or whenever. We'll be back in just a moment. Lines are still open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Join the conversation in just a few minutes.
The best is yet to come.
Welcome back to The Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. We continue our conversation about National Coming Out Day. So for those who are trying to decide whether or not they're going to tell family, friends, those that they care about, even coworkers for that matter, Andre, what do you suggest? What kind of work must someone do in their own head to come out?
I think the first thing is that those of you who are out there listening need to know, as we talked about, that being homosexual, identifying as homosexual, lesbian, trans, within the LGBTQ community isn't always trauma-induced. David, you had just mentioned, you know, that that's a common narrative that is projected in our society. And while some of us in the community, you know, have experienced trauma, it's not always the case for all of us, you know, becoming who we are, deciding to be liberating who we are, and or inviting people in due to our trauma, or those who have experienced trauma. But I will say that just know that there is nothing wrong with you, that there are people just like you who identify like you. I think representation is really, really important. Being able to look on social media and see Alina Waith, and seeing someone who I identify with, who looks like me, dresses like me, loves someone like the person that I love, is really important. And just knowing that there's someone else out there like me is empowering. It's empowering. I work a lot with young people, and anytime that conversations about gender identity or sexual orientation come up, I'm the first person to let my students know when it is appropriate how I identify. And it's so amazing just to how many young women, men, people come up to me afterwards and wanting to chat about their experiences and chat about trauma that they may have experienced.
Or not experienced, right.
Which is right. Not as significant, because there are states where you as an educator can be fired for doing that.
Absolutely.
States where they have what is called no promo homo laws. So I just want to honor the bravery in disclosing that and having that conversation with your students. Mm-hmm. I would add to that and double down. If this were Instagram, I'd double tap that to say, if you hear me say nothing else, hear me when I say that you are beautifully and wonderfully made. The point I made to my mother when she asked me about hell and the passages in the Bible that everybody's quick to quote, is that God formed me before I knew myself, before I drew my first breath. And if she doesn't make mistakes, then I'm quite all right in the way that I was formed. And so I think it's important for everyone to understand that coming out is a continual thing. It happens sometimes for folks daily when you're engaged in conversations where people will make assumptions about you or otherwise trying to figure out how you show up in the world. And so when you do have the conversation, do it on your own terms, in ways that make you comfortable, with people that you think are worthy of you engaging in that type of conversation. But do it in ways that, again, affirm who you are and how you show up in the world.
How would you tell someone, let's just start with adults, because I think that the children piece is a completely complex conversation. But when you're talking about adults, whether you have you've come out or what have you, that are homophobic, that they, when they say those Veronica Harrington kinds of things, how do you address those visceral comments and looks and all of that?
I always address it in love, as hard as it might be. I know that there are several there's pieces of being a black woman, lesbian woman, queer woman, just with the language and the rhetoric, that the LGBTQ plus language and rhetoric, that I'm learning, as I do advocacy work, as a black lesbian woman. And I'll find times when people will make really inappropriate comments, problematic comments, like a Veronica. But I also think back to people who I love, my parents. Sometimes, a lot of the times they say problematic things. I can either scold them for it in a very malicious way, or I can tell them, you know, that doesn't make me feel good. Let me tell you why that doesn't make me feel good, and let me tell you how you can say this in a healthier way, in a way that would be that makes me feel comfortable. I run into a lot of people who ask me the most ridiculous questions about my sexual orientation, and because most people, when they think of homosexual relationships or lesbian relationships, they automatically go to the sex. As mm-hmm. if that's the only thing that we're about. And so I'll get crazy questions. But I try my hardest, as aggravated as I might be, to always address them in the most positive way possible. Because you can tell when someone is being demeaning and asking the question just out of ignorance and being absolutely demeaning. But there's others who come to you and have the questions and will make the comments and are being authentic and really want to know. So I just think it's our duty to do our best to make sure that we address them in the most positive way
possible. But this is why it's good to be around Black women, because they will save the world, and in part because they give grace where it's warranted. I think two things are important for me. There are certain questions that I just simply will not answer. When people are seeking to understand parts of my life that do not add value, in particular how I engage in intimate relationships with those I love, it's just a non sequitur. It's a non starter. It's not a conversation we need to have. If someone's interested in what it's like for me as a Black same gender loving man to move through the world, if asked with respect, I'm inclined to engage in a conversation with respect. I'm also quick to check people. Like, I'm the wrong one to be invited. There was a conversation I had today digitally with someone who didn't understand the inviting in campaign that the National Black Justice Coalition has launched. I would also lift that up. We've asked folks, and I want to invite you as well, to share your inviting in story, your coming out story. And for people that are thinking about this process, look at that. Look at other people as a source of inspiration who have done it, because there might be something you can hold on to. But in the context of this conversation, there was somebody who referred to me as cis. And I'm clear. I'm a Black, same gender loving man. I'm not a woman. I'm not your sister. There are just certain things that aren't going to fly with me. And so I say that to say that I will have conversations with people up to a certain point, at the point at which I feel like I'm disrespected as a man, as a person. The conversation is off.
Well, and help me with something, because, you know, for example, I've known Aure for a long time. I knew her before she came out. I knew her after she came out. And, you know, my attitude, you know, about it was, once, you know, we had the conversation, I was like, okay, good. You know,
yeah, but you're more enlightened than most, right?
Yeah, but is that insensitive?
I have to ask Aure that regard.
Yeah, because I'm like, okay.
Yeah, you're like, do you want more?
Right, yeah, but
insensitive would be disregarding it, mm-hmm. Trying to convince her that that's not the way she should show up in the world, mm-hmm. Anything other than being supportive.
Yeah, and the difference between before and after is that beforehand she was stressed, afterwards she was happy.
Well, yeah, I mean, giving that response is like, yes, mm. Oh my God. I'm accepted. It wasn't that hard. Yeah.
Mm.
So, yeah.
Because
there's a fear, right, that the people who love you won't when that becomes a thing, right? I'll never forget driving not too far from here. I moved here in 2006, a fellow with the Congressional Black Caucus Foundation, and my boys and I drove past the 930 Club, and it must have been gay night, and at this time I was not engaged in relationships with men. And one of my boys made a comment about punks.
Mm-hmm.
And so the first time that I thought about acknowledging publicly to my boys that I was in a same gender relationship, all I could think about was that moment when we were in the car and he said something about punks, right? The thing that I wanted most for my boys in that moment was just the acknowledgement that I'm the same David, that regardless of who I'm dating or how I love and all of that stuff, I'm the same person that shows up in community with you, fight for the same things that you care for, want Black people to get free, healthy, happy, and whole. And who I love and how I show up in the world shouldn't matter.
And I think you made a really important point when you said Black women give grace. And I think for teachable moments, whether we're talking about the LGBT community, whether we're talking about racism,
yeah,
whether we're talking about sexism or ageism or anything, that you have a choice to use a difficult comment as a teachable moment.
And you know, I just want to make clarify. There are going to be situations in which you are approached by someone who is there to hurt you.
Yeah, sometimes the lesson is I'm not the one to try.
Right, that are there to be hurtful. I am someone who was extremely open and authentic. Like, I don't mind the questions, as inappropriate as they get. As they're either humorous to me or a teachable moment. I do not mind. Because if anything, in my mind, I'm saying, you know, the question would be, well, let me ask you why you're asking that. Let's unpack
right,
this. Let's talk about this. Why are you fascinated?
Yeah.
You know, so it would be a moment to enlighten. So then I could ensure, or at least hope, that I could change your mindset once you leave from our conversation.
Yeah, and we're laughing, but this will hopefully make some people uncomfortable. The most interesting moments for me have been when Black men have asked me questions that have been disrespectful because they're interested in me and don't know how to have the conversation. And so much of this for me is a result of us not creating space. And I just want to say thank you to you and WHUR for doing this on tonight, because it didn't have to happen. And there are so many other outlets where this conversation is not being had.
True.
Especially in our community. But it is because we often don't have the language and are not invited into spaces where we can have these conversations that people are the most offensive that they can be when they can be. I just want to acknowledge, even in this space, if we were joined by a Black trans person, I think the dynamic in this would be very different. Because I'm even thinking about some of the questions that I get about how I show up in the world don't come close to the level of disrespect that our trans brothers and sisters and gender nonconforming people face, simply because people don't know.
I think that's a good place to end this conversation. I want to thank David Johns and Andre Watkins for coming in and talking to us. And please continue to educate and do everything that you are doing to help change the world. Andre, so good to see you. If I don't get a wedding invitation, you will hear from me. How about that?
Uh-oh.
Let's talk about some of the disrespectful things you'll hear from me.
Ring bearer, I hear you signed up to be a ring bearer.
There you go. Thank you all so much for coming in. I appreciate it. That is the Daily Drum on SiriusXM Channel 141 for this Thursday, October 11th. I'm Harold Fisher. You can tweet us using the hashtag WHURFM. Now, stay tuned for The Connection. Good night.